Imagine you've spent, I don't know, thousands of dollars building this totally uncrackable, thick titanium bank vault.
Right, the ultimate physical security.
Exactly. And you put all your life savings inside, but then a thief walks right up to you in the street, points a $30 steel wrench at your kneecap, and just says, "Open it."
Yeah, and suddenly that titanium door is, well, completely useless.
Completely useless. The vault is doing its job perfectly, but you, the human, are the vulnerability. So, welcome to today's deep dive.
Glad to be here.
Today, we are looking at a pretty terrifying reality. Like, how do you protect your data when someone is physically forcing you to hand it over?
It's scary stuff, honestly, because we spend so much time worrying about, the faceless hacker in a dark room halfway across the world.
Right, the classic movie hacker.
Yeah, exactly. And that feels distant. It feels like a clean math problem. You set up a strong password, use good encryption, and you think, okay, I'm safe.
But stepping into the real physical world introduces a vulnerability that most of our devices are just entirely unequipped to handle.
Which brings us to the source material for today.
Yes, we are exploring this fascinating and frankly chilling dilemma from a blog post titled "The Honeypot Under Your Desk."
Great title, by the way.
Oh, it really is. It was written by Vlad Sigalicu back in April of 2026 for localghost.ai.
Right. And our mission for this deep dive is to really explore that massive gulf between protecting your data when it's just sitting in a drawer.
Which is pretty easy, relatively speaking.
Right, versus protecting it under severe physical coercion.
So, to understand the stakes here, I mean, we really have to look at what LocalGhost actually is.
Yeah, because it's not just a normal hard drive.
Not at all. If you're listening to this right now, think about your own smartphone or your laptop. If someone seized it from you, what would they find?
I mean, probably some embarrassing emails, your photo library. Maybe your weird browsing history.
Exactly. But LocalGhost is an entirely different beast. It's a localized AI storage device.
Right, the whole premise of it is that the only cloud is you.
Which sounds great for privacy, but it means this device contains a searchable, perfectly correlated index of your entire life.
Yeah, it doesn't just hand over flat files. It hands over an AI daemon that has analyzed your habits across years of context.
So an interrogator wouldn't even have to dig through your folders, right?
No, not at all. They could just sit down at their device and literally ask the AI, who did this person meet with last Tuesday and what were they worried about?
Oh, wow. That is a total nightmare scenario for, well, journalists, activists, or just anyone pulled into a back room at a highly restrictive border crossing.
Truly a nightmare. It is an incredibly powerful tool for you to own, but a catastrophic liability to surrender.
Vlad summarizes this perfectly in the post. He says, "A thief can't make you type your password. A person holding a gun to your head can."
That really sets the stage. We are moving from the theoretical danger of a stolen box to the visceral, sweaty palms reality of a forced unlock.
And standard security advice just fundamentally fails the moment a physical threat enters the room.
Oh, absolutely. The usual line is always, encrypt your hard drive, use strong passwords, and you'll be fine.
But the math of encryption doesn't matter if the attacker decides to, ignore the math entirely.
Exactly. Standard encryption protects what the cybersecurity industry calls data at rest.
Meaning when the device is off.
Right. If your device is turned off, sitting in a police evidence locker, or zipped in a thief's backpack, encryption is brilliant.
Because modern encryption forces the attacker to brute force the mathematics.
Yeah, which requires supercomputers and decades of time. But encryption does not protect you when someone with legal authority is standing right in front of you.
Like a customs agent demanding access before letting you cross a border.
Or a literal physical threat. It's the old $30 wrench joke made manifest.
Right. You can spend millions on quantum-proof cryptography, and an attacker just bypasses all of it by threatening to break your legs.
When someone compels you to unlock a device, they aren't breaking the math, they're breaking the person.
Wow. Okay, let's unpack this. Because the local ghost developer actually treats compelled disclosure as a baseline assumption.
Yeah, their threat model acknowledges that eventually someone will force you to unlock the device.
Which is a really grim but realistic way to design a product.
It really is. If the system simply hands over the keys when you're threatened, then the box is just too dangerous to own in the first place.
Right, so you need a way to comply with the attacker's demands without actually surrendering your real life.
Because refusing to unlock the box isn't a survivable option.
Right, so they had to build an architecture that allows for plausible deniability. And the blog details the solution in what they call ghost.sect version 1.0.
And the mechanism they use for this is what they call structural ambiguity.
Which I find so fascinating. It's not just putting a false bottom in a digital suitcase.
No, it's more like building a hallway with 1,000 unmarked doors.
And your peon is the key that temporarily materializes just one of those doors into existence.
Exactly. And notice what is conspicuously missing from that hallway.
A sign.
Yes. There is no toggle in the settings menu that says duress mode.
Because if an attacker sees a button to switch profiles, they instantly know you're hiding something.
Right off the bat. Instead, the system relies on parallel file systems. You start the authentication process with a FIDO2 hardware key.
Which is that little physical token you have to tap to prove you're physically present.
Exactly. Which completely eliminates the remote hacker halfway across the world.
The attacker has to physically be in the room with your device and your token.
But here's the kicker. The hardware key itself doesn't store any of your pins. It just acts as a physical gatekeeper.
So the pins live entirely in your head.
Yep. And when you type a PIN, the software doesn't check it against a master list of passwords to see if it's correct.
Because there is no list.
Right. Instead, whatever numbers you type go through a cryptographic hashing function. They specifically use an algorithm called Argon2SID.
Okay, wait. Argon2SID?
Yeah. It derives a decryption key from the PIN. And whatever world that key happens to unlock, that is the world the system boots into.
Okay, but here's where it gets really interesting and, frankly, a little scary. If I'm panicking in a border security room, my adrenaline is spiking.
Oh, absolutely.
The math of the encryption might be flawless, but my brain isn't. How on earth am I supposed to remember 5 different pins with a hostile interrogator screaming at me?
Without accidentally typing your real one.
Exactly. That is a massive cognitive load under extreme stress. Typing the wrong pin exposes your true index.
It is a lot of pressure. But Vlad addresses this psychological friction by sharing a personal mnemonic system in the post.
Right. He suggests anchoring everything to your one true pin and offsetting from there.
Yeah. So if your real actual PIN is 2525, your first decoy PIN could just step the last digit down by one.
So your first decoy is 2524.
Exactly.
I mean, isn't that a terrible idea? If an intelligence agent realizes I just gave them a decoy and the decoy was 2524, won't they immediately try 2525?
Well, they would try to guess the numbers around it, sure.
Right.
But they could only do that if they could guess a million times a second. And this is exactly why the system uses Argon2id for the hashing.
Oh, okay.
Argon2id is what's called a memory hard function. It doesn't just require processing power. It requires a massive chunk of the system's RAM to compute the hash.
So it creates an intentional physical bottleneck.
Exactly. It takes a second or two just to process one single guess.
Wow, okay.
An attacker cannot rapidly brute force a sequence. They're forced to interrogate you for each individual attempt.
So the cryptography essentially buys you the time to play dumb.
Yep. You memorize a pattern. 2525 is real. 2534 is decoy 1. 2523 is decoy 2.
The digits are related enough that you won't blank out under pressure.
But distinct enough that muscle memory won't betray you into typing your real life.
Right. Okay, but what if you're in a situation where handing over a decoy isn't enough? Like, what if they're going to take the box anyway, and you need to ensure the data never survives?
Well, that requires the nuclear option.
The purge PIN.
The purge PIN. And obviously, you do not want the purge PIN anywhere near your normal muscle memory.
No kidding. In his example, if the real PIN is 2525, the purge PIN changes a different position entirely. He uses 1525.
Right. It feels fundamentally different to type.
What I find absolutely brilliant is the user experience of the purge. If you are sitting there with a hostile agent breathing down your neck and you type 1525, the screen doesn't turn red.
No, no alarms go off. A dramatic data destruction initiated progress bar would just get you thrown in a cell.
Exactly. The attacker just sees a standard, boring, first-run setup wizard.
It looks exactly like a brand new device that was just taken out of the shrink wrap.
Welcome to Local Dosed. Please choose your language.
Hmm.
Meanwhile, behind that incredibly mundane screen, the box is going absolutely scorched earth.
It's just overwriting the hidden volumes with random data.
And we need to be clear about what is actually being destroyed here, right? Because Local Ghost relies on deep databases to give its AI its memory.
Right. It drops the Postgres databases, which destroys the structured historical context.
And it flushes the Redis caches, wiping out the AI's short-term train of thought.
It even reaches out to your network and dereferences the distributed mist shards.
Wait, the mist shards? Those are the fragmented backup copies floating around your local network.
Exactly. The box intentionally corrupts the pointers to those backups, turning them into just unrecoverable digital dust.
So the master encryption keys are shredded. By the time that little setup wizard is asking the interrogator to connect to Wi-Fi, your entire digital history is permanently vaporized.
Just think about the psychology of the attacker in that exact moment. They plug it in, force you to unlock it, and they see a fresh, unconfigured device.
They might assume they grabbed a spare box.
Or they might assume you typed the wrong PI in and locked them out. The assumptions they walk away with are entirely different from the suspicions they walked in with.
The purge mechanism really handles that absolute worst-case scenario. But let's say you don't want to burn your whole life down.
Right. Maybe you just want to use one of those decoy peons like 2524.
Hand over a fake profile, let the authorities poke around, and then walk away with your device.
But we hit a massive roadblock here in the author's own timeline.
Yeah, if you build a room with a false wall, but the room behind the false wall is completely empty.
The attacker's gonna know it's a false wall.
Exactly. A pristine, empty secondary volume is incredibly suspicious.
An interrogator will immediately ask why you have a device designed to catalog your whole life, yet it only contains 3 generic emails and a stock photo of a dog.
And this is the giant discrepancy in the Local Ghost version 1.0 release. Vlad admits that while the multi-volume architecture ships in version 1.0, the automatic decoy generator does not.
Right. The AI feature that actually populates those fake worlds with believable data is missing.
Because creating the architecture for hidden doors is just a math problem.
But generating a fully convincing localized fake life falls into what we can call the uncanny valley of digital forensics.
Which is staggeringly difficult.
Because the attacker isn't just double-clicking a few folders. They're analyzing an AI's interpretation of your behavior.
To pass a stress test inspection, a decoy volume needs texture.
Right. It needs plausible spending patterns that match the geolocation of the person holding the box.
A human border agent isn't looking for 50 perfect stock photos of landscapes. They're looking for the messy texture of reality.
Where are the blurry photos of your shoes taken by mistake? Where are the screenshots of recipes you never cooked?
Where are the boring calendar invites for dental appointments?
Exactly. If the decoy lacks the mundane friction of a real human life, the attacker instantly smells a rat.
Which puts the actual current users of version 1.0 in a really exhausting position.
Yeah, if you use this system today, you have to do the manual work of populating that decoy life yourself.
You literally have to roleplay a second, incredibly boring person.
You have to browse the internet as them, save weather observations as them, generate boring grocery receipts as them.
That is just the immense burden of maintaining a dual existence. Honestly, couldn't I just take a shortcut?
What do you mean?
Like, just take my real life, delete the sensitive political activist stuff, and leave the cat photos and the grocery receipts.
Oh, no. Redaction is a trap.
Really? Why?
Your behavior patterns themselves are highly identifying fingerprints.
Oh, right.
The metadata of what time you usually wake up and start typing, how frequently you text certain numbers, the specific cadence of your online purchases.
All of that paints a unique behavioral portrait.
Exactly. If you just redact the dangerous bits, you are presenting a slightly sanitized version of your real self.
So total plausible deniability requires the decoy to be a complete stranger who just happens to inhabit the same hardware.
Yes. The psychological toll of meticulously crafting a boring alter ego just in case you get pulled aside at an airport is immense.
But let's say you do it. You spend months building a flawless, boring digital life. There is still a hard ceiling to how well this architectural trick protects you.
Which brings us to the most dangerous threat model discussed in the post.
What happens if the attacker isn't a bored customs officer or a thief with a wrench, but a state-level intelligence agency?
In that scenario, the system's own documentation becomes its fatal flaw.
Because the local ghost architecture is public.
Right. Anyone can read how ghost.secured works. This means any advanced adversary already knows that a local ghost device is capable of hiding parallel volumes.
It's the Veracrypt flaw, isn't it?
Exactly. Veracrypt is a famous, older encryption tool that pioneered this exact type of 2-volume hidden design, and it ran into the exact same wall.
If an intelligence officer knows the software on your desk has a duress mode, they simply will not stop at the first PI you give them.
They will continue to apply pressure. whether that's legal threats, indefinite detention, or physical harm.
Until you give them a second peon, and then they will demand a third.
And a nation-state adversary isn't just casually browsing your fake grocery receipts either.
Right. They are deploying forensic analysis against the physical hardware itself.
They take a complete bit-for-bit image of your solid-state drive and analyze the entropy.
The mathematical randomness of the unallocated space.
Right, because true empty space on a hard drive looks different mathematically than space that is crammed full of encrypted data posing as empty space.
Oh, wow.
Precisely. They also analyze the wear leveling algorithms on the solid state drive itself.
Wait, wear leveling?
Yeah. SSDs constantly move data around the physical memory chips to prevent any one sector from burning out.
Right.
Even if your software is hiding a secret volume, the physical controller on the drive leaves ghost trails showing that massive amounts of data were written to areas that are supposedly blank.
And forensic tools can spot these inconsistencies.
They can. Vlad offers a very stark warning about this limitation. The Post says, if your threat model is a nation state with prior knowledge and time, you need a different tool and probably a different country.
Man. Which brings us back to the human element that no encryption can patch.
There is no physical impossibility stopping you from giving up every single PIN you have if the cost of refusing is high enough.
If an authoritarian regime threatens the safety of your family, unless you provide the final PIN, you will provide the final PIN.
Structural ambiguity gives you a chance to lie convincingly to a casual adversary, but it cannot protect you against an adversary willing to apply limitless physical coercion.
We've covered a massive amount of ground today. We started by exploring the fundamental difference between data at rest, where math protects you,
and compelled disclosure, where the physical threat makes standard encryption totally irrelevant.
Right. We looked at how LocalGhost uses a FIDO2 key and Argon2 hashing to create parallel unmarked doors,
allowing you to hand over a decoy life or trigger a silent catastrophic purge of the AI's databases.
We also hit the harsh friction of the uncanny valley. The reality that until an AI generator can perfectly replicate the messy texture of human existence, users are stuck performing an exhausting manual roleplay.
To maintain their own decoys, yeah.
And finally, we confronted the hard limit. State-level adversaries who use physical forensics and brutal interrogation to shatter the illusion entirely.
It highlights a terrifying paradox for you, the listener, navigating this new era of technology.
We are constantly urged to consolidate our data, to bring our files home, to use localized AI, to index our memories and habits so we can escape the surveillance capitalism of massive cloud companies.
The only cloud is you.
But in the process of escaping the cloud, you consolidate your entire digital existence into a single physical box under your desk.
You inadvertently forge the ultimate surveillance tool for anyone who can physically compel you to unlock it.
Privacy in the AI age isn't just about AES 256 encryption.
It's about psychology, plausible deniability, and the heavy burden of managing the physical liabilities we create.
It really makes you evaluate the mental toll of carrying around a perfectly correlated index of your life, which leaves us with one final, incredibly provocative thought to chew on.
What's that?
Well, it builds directly on the hurdle of the decoy generator. Vlad mentioned that creating a fake life currently falls into the uncanny valley because it lacks texture. But we know the trajectory of AI generation.
Oh, it is accelerating rapidly.
So let's project a few years into the future. Let's assume LocalGhost's AI eventually crosses that uncanny valley.
Okay.
It gets exponentially better at generating perfectly textured, deeply believable fake histories. Fake journal entries written flawlessly in your specific tone.
AI-generated blurry photos of places you almost visited, complete with realistic metadata.
Fake emails complaining about software you don't even use.
A flawless parallel existence running silently alongside your own.
Exactly. If we spend our time managing these perfectly curated AI-generated decoy lives to protect our real ones, will we eventually reach a point where we ourselves struggle to distinguish our actual digital memories from the decoys we built to hide them?
Wow.
If the false wall is built flawlessly enough and the fake life has more detail than our own fading memories, you might just forget which side of the wall you're standing on.
That is a wild thought.
It turns out building an unbreakable digital vault door is the easy part.
Mm.
The real danger, the truly messy part of cybersecurity, is the human standing in the room.